There are tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own. Beyond my years, I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. I'm on the road, to recovery, step by step, day by day. I'm on the road, to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting
How's everybody doing tonight? Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Studies Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I've asked Ryan to come up and do our joke for the week.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
All right. What? All right. So there's a guy from Idaho, a guy from Nebraska, a guy from Florida, and a guy from New Jersey all riding in a car. And they're riding down to Florida. And the guy from Idaho, he picks up a suitcase and starts pulling a bunch of potatoes out of his suitcase and throw them out the window. And everybody's like, what are you doing? And he's like, well, I'm from Idaho. We have a ton of potatoes there, so I don't want to bring these down to Florida with me. So then the guy from Nebraska, he picks up his suitcase, and he starts pulling all these ears of corn out of his suitcase and starts throwing them out the window. Everybody's like, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm from Nebraska. We've got tons of ears of corn there, so I don't want to bring these to Florida with me. They're like, oh, okay. So then the guy from Florida, he picks up the guy from New Jersey and throws him out the window.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Jeff. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or that might or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. As soon as the lights go down, we'll start.
Dies ist Christus.
say the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, you can follow along or repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There's a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Stephanie to read Spiritual Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
Stephanie, recovered alcoholic.
Stephanie.
Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With a few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane or meeting mode, or you can just turn them off. I just came here tonight to truly hear and feel something, and with that, help me welcome Peter.
Jersey guys don't get thrown out of cars. Let's clean that up right away. My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thank everyone for being here and the group for having me again. Got a handful of weeks to go through this work, and we'll see where God takes us. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol. And as I usually announce at most of these podiums, I'm here tonight as a recovered alcoholic. That's how I like to introduce myself, as a recovered alcoholic. And not better than, not less than, not special, just my truth that God has brought me to a place of getting recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. The thing I've come to experience on this journey is getting recovered from the isms that accompany alcoholism. Being separated from a drink doesn't mean I'm much better. Being separated from a mood or mind-altering substance doesn't mean I'm much better. I'm just separated. And there were many times I was locked up waiting to see the judge, and I couldn't get access to liquor or any other things. And when I was finally released, usually ROR, I wasn't sponsorship material. And what I've shared many times at these podiums is that my experience abundantly proves to me that I can be more dangerous sober without spiritual muscles than when I'm drinking, because when I'm drinking, I'm really predictable. When I was using narcotics, I was very predictable. I'd steal, I'd do whatever I had to do it, get it done, and then a few hours later I was back doing it again, and my life consisted of, you know, maybe a 4-block radius. And when I was drinking, the same thing. I didn't do much, I didn't go anywhere. I was the easiest guy to spot because I was very predictable. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I quickly get in touch with what I suffer from, again, without a drink in me. And that's some of the things we can talk about, even to not just folks who've been around a while, but sharing my experience with some of the new folks who might be in here that just go into a meeting and picking up a red chip, a blue chip, or whatever chip they're giving away that night, or whatever you're entitled to, doesn't mean we're much better. We're just going to a meeting and hopefully getting grace to stay dry, but we've done nothing with the spiritual condition yet. We're just separated. And for me, the early recovery was incredibly painful. I was going on all sorts of sprees. I was talking about this last night. I was visiting sex sprees and food sprees, thinking sprees and fear sprees. And during my first year, I was binging and purging and had this little eating disorder thing going on that no one knew about. I could not be alone on the couch, present to the moment. Even though I prayed in the morning and prayed at night, because that's what you guys told me to do, I had a whole bunch of time with me and the thinking mind and all the voices in the head that were pulling me in 100 different directions. My book says I had to be convinced that self manifested in various ways, which was what had defeated us, defeated me. It wins all the time, and it demands obedience. Every one of those voices in my head demanded obedience, and I was getting shredded. I was getting pulled in 100 different directions. Now, I knew right from wrong. I knew I shouldn't be going here, and I shouldn't be making this phone call, and I shouldn't be doing this. And as a therapist once told me, Pete, stop shooting on yourself. That's all I was doing. But I couldn't just be alone in my own company, and I watched the clock tick until it was getting close to the meeting time, and I'd get there, and I'd be good for the hour, relatively good, until the meeting ended, and I was back out there again, and the voices met me out the door. When I do inventory, and if you get good at inventory by writing inventory, and I speak for myself, I have a really bad reaction to just abstinence. I can't do abstinence well. I'm not a put the plug in a jug, don't drink and go to meetings, 90 meetings in 90 days guy. If that's your thing, that floats your boat, that gets you through the night, great. It's not my experience. I wouldn't have made 20 minutes that way. But I don't do well without spiritual muscles. And the thing about doing inventory, and we're going to finish up step 4, God willing, tonight, that I get to look at my life as the huge contradiction. And what I'm putting on paper is not the way I'm going to be living moving forward. But I needed to identify what was going on within me and no longer what was going on with you. I was sharing last night about the contradiction that I got to see on paper, even currently when I'll get home tonight, God willing, I'll kneel down, do my prayer meditation, I'll write some inventory, do a nightly review. And even in a simple inventory, I will see my contradiction, my self-reliance, which manifests in fear, my need to take control because I'm fearful, my fear of the outcome, whatever it might be, because underneath the resentment is fear anyway. And I get to see how I'm navigating and miss the mark through the day. The contradiction. Because I'm the type of guy who would get on my knees, have a great prayer session, have a wonderful meditation, get up off my knees and fly right back into self-reliance again before I put my hand on the doorknob. And I forget everything I just did. Or maybe I walk out the door and I'm feeling pretty good, I'm feeling close to my God and right with the universe, and then something happens at work or something happens on the highway or I get the phone call that someone disappoints me or says something that angers me. And I can quickly go right back into putting both hands on a wheel and taking over my life, knowing what's better for them and what's better for me. And what I have found in the pruning of the tree is that sometimes being called to sanctity means simply that sometimes I just have to endure my own imperfections with patience until God fixes it. And not to do anything. Because as an alcoholic, I want to do something. It's more difficult for me to do nothing. The contradiction that I would live. I was torn between godliness and sinfulness. That's my life. That's my life now. Because I say I'm a recovered alcoholic, that doesn't mean that other guy has gone away for good. He just goes dormant most of the time. But just a little nudge and he wakes up. A little fear, he'll wake up, he'll take over. And that's that thing that goes on in all of us all the time. And for me to admit I don't have that anymore, get a different speaker. Put on a CD. You don't need me because that means I'm lying. The great thing, the freedom, the realization of coming to terms that I'm flawed, I'm broken, I leak oil. I'm a broken, flawed character. The realization of that is actually the freedom. That God is always beyond my cleverest plans, but yet when I pray, it brings debt to every identity that doesn't come from me. And for my prayers to have some depth and weight, I need to be out of the way. When I pray, I can't be present. But I am. I show up in my brokenness. And sometimes the best prayer I can offer God is, please give me mercy. I do lots of reading, lots of working with books, all sorts of spiritual books. And there was a sect of monks, they call them the Desert Fathers. And their prayer was simply, Lord, have mercy on me. That was it. I come into AA, I think I got to talk in tongues and Latin when it comes to God. Like I'm going to impress God on how pristine I am today. When he made me, he knows how flawed I am. He's nudging St. Peter, say, you believe this? Because I've been made well aware of me, how quickly I can shift. Now, thank the good Lord, I don't have a lot of those shifts, but they're there. And knowing that is my brokenness, the greater need for God. The contradiction going from godliness to sinfulness in 1 minute. At 10 a.m., I'm feeling great, and at 10:05, I'm looking to just strangle someone. And I'm thinking a way to be vengeful and things like that. I'm sure most of us can identify with that. And that's the contradiction that I got to identify with when I was doing inventory. Especially in my fourth column when I'm writing resentment inventory. Because when I'm throwing that person's name down in the first column, it's Joe. The cause, yeah, I can feel that cause. I remember what they did to me. I'm reliving it, and it tastes really good. This is what they did to me. Then I get to the third column, I get a little further away from it. And I'm starting to see how things were hurt, interfered, or threatening me. Then I get to the fourth column, and now it's all about me and how I operate. There's the contradiction, how I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Now, my ego doesn't want to touch that. And my ego says, this is crazy, it's too much work, we'll never get to the other side. Because every time the mind tells me something's impossible, the spirit and you prove to me how possible this thing is. Because some of my heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous were the biggest sinners when they were out there. And in here until they got this message. And what the message did, the message in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous was about driving a drunk back to God or to God perhaps for the first time in their life and away from the old self. Bringing death to self for successful living. But just talking about that and going to a workshop and hearing about it, it's good information. We might walk out the door and have raised the level of awareness which is needed for change. In order to have freedom, we need to change. In order to have change, we need to have suffering. So I might walk out the door and say, okay, I need to do some things, and by the time I get home, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll just quote that guy the next meeting I get to because that sounded really profound. Don't think I'm profound. I need to take action. I need to chop wood and carry water. Get in the trenches. Do the plowing and God will do the growing. Which kind of leads me to the next thing I got to see in inventory. And every time I write inventory, thank the good Lord, lesser degrees. And that's not because I'm better than anyone. It's just God working. I remember my grand sponsor told me, he says, one time, kid, you're going to get to a place in this inventory where your fourth step is going to be really small. And your amends list is going to be just a couple of people. It doesn't mean you're not doing the work. It's just God showing himself in your life that you've transcended the old you. Not your alcoholism, but you don't do the things you used to do. My inventory gets to see how narcissistic we are or I can be. The need for things to make me okay. The need for attention, the need to people please, the need to get the attaboy over and over and over again. We see it sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get a cat come in here and he wants to be Moses of the group. She wants to be Mother Teresa of the group. They need to be behind the podium speaking all the time. They need to be the guy or the woman in the group. Please notice me when I walk in. And their talks are about lecturing and pointing fingers at what you should be doing rather than where they are. That's narcissism. We do it in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I walk into a room, can I, for the glory of God, would I sacrifice being known and popular and even respected? Would I settle for being an unknown and not respected and experience the glory of God? Most of us say, let me think about it. Get back to you in 90 days. I'll sit with that. Because I want to walk into a room. I mean, it's nice having friends and get the handshakes. The greeting at the door, I think, is the most important commitment here. And that's wonderful. It's a band on open wound. You feel like you're with your tribe, your home. But do I need that? It's nice to get an attaboy. It's nice to say, hey, great talk, to hear that. But do I need that? I am my money. I am my car. I am my relationship. I am my career. I am my home group. I am this commitment. I do those things. I like nice things. I shared this last night. I like nice things. I like nice clothes. I like a nice car. I like to have a safe, pretty place to live in. I like a clean bed. But I remember living without those things. Do I still need those things? Or do I just want those things? And I get to see my manipulation and control. When you don't give me what I want or take what I have, I'm furious. I'm going to war with you up in here, the calamity up in the head. The narcissistic me, the self-centered, self-seeking me who drives around in an armored tank picking people off all day long. Not saying a word, shaking hands. How's it going, Steve? Everything good? And I'm going, walking away going, I hate this guy. I don't like this guy. I love Stephen. You know that. Someone has success and you congratulate them, you walk away, how come not me? I'm not happy for you. I'm jealous. I'm envious. That's my life. And if I'm not careful, if I don't continue to seek this power to desperation for a drowning man, all those things will come back. If I don't practice fidelity to God, all those things will come back. Because I'm not practicing fidelity to God, that means I'm worshiping something else and it's already in. And it won't announce its arrival. It'll just show up. And suddenly, do you ever come to an awakening that you're right in the middle of something and you're saying, how the hell did I get here? How did I get so far into this relationship when it was toxic from day one? People in sober houses, please listen to what I just said. I can imagine a phone call home. She calls up, Dad, I just met a really nice guy. He's really cute. Really? What does he do? He's in a halfway house. How many days is he sober? 3 days. You hear the gun click, click, and he's on his way down, right? We're going to get married, have children, everything's going to be groovy. Get a good insurance policy because you wind up in detox. Okay. Ba-dum-bum. I say that because I love you. I'm sick of burying people. So I got to see my narcissism, and I still do. The contradiction in my life from going from an angel in 1 minute, godliness in 1 minute, to this other guy in another minute. And we have that DNA. We got the God DNA in us, but we also got this free will and this mind that takes me to places I don't want to go to, makes me do things I don't want to do, that I don't want to do or say. I'm weak flesh sold unto the slavery of sin is what Scripture says. And somewhere I got the deluded thought. I remember years ago, because I would hear this in AA, the therapeutic community infiltrated AA about finding ourselves. I need to find myself. I need to experience myself, find out who I really am. And an old timer said, good luck to me. Good luck trying to find yourself. It's about being rid of self. You don't need to discover self. It's about being rid of self altogether. I don't want to find that guy anymore. He's done enough damage. And what happens when I do find myself? Now what? How's it going? This is the guy who's ruined me and has hurt others. So I write this four-column inventory. And as I said last week about we have resentment, cause, effects, and where am I at fault, the fourth column was a rubber hit the road for me, and I saw me on paper, how I behaved and how I thought. Thought, word, and deed on paper in the fourth column. And it's really incredible because once we start to get some spiritual muscles, if you ever gone back and looked at an old fourth step, the things that you were seething over, and you look at it and say, I cannot believe that I was behaving this way and that these people got under my skin, because if it happened now, it'd be nothing. So is it possible that when we get spiritually well, that list gets smaller and the things we would normally do in the past in column four, little by slowly start to dissolve? Because the less ego I'm running around with, the greater service I am to God and to you. And the only way I can little by slowly grind this ego into dust is by a surrender, a daily surrender in my brokenness to God, to a sponsor, and to this work. With no reservations, no lurking notion. But the thing is, I can't start a spiritual experience with the answer. I can't start a spiritual experience with a plan of where I want to land, because all I'll do is gather up information and reinvent myself. This is a path that I have no idea where I'm going every time I go through the work, where I'm going to land, what my perceptions are going to be. I just love the effect produced by God. I want to be his agent, so in I go. And wherever he takes me is better than anything I plan, because God's beyond my cleverest plans. I need to surrender to that and embrace that. And my imperfections along the way, I just need to be patient, because I can't change them with my best day. I can't change my defects. I can't work on my defects. I can't modify my defects. Sometimes I just have to endure them patiently until the Father says, I'm tweaking this and removing that. And all I can do in the interim is surrender, which is what 6 and 7 is going to ask us to do anyway. Willingness to let it go, surrender, 7-step prayer. Now go make amends. So I complete this this resentment inventory, and I also include principles and institutions. Now, I don't remember if I talked about that last week, but I was very, very, very angry with insurance companies and the medical community and my religious community, because none of them were capable of saving my mom. Institutions, I remember putting down radical groups, gangster groups, things like that. The U.S. government with the Vietnam War, because I remember growing up with the Vietnam War and how these poor men were treated on the way there and on the way back. I was furious about this stuff. By the time I'm 28 writing my first inventory, it's coming off the pen. This is the poison that's been sitting in my system, and that's the stuff, that's how I see the world, through that stuff. All of those resentments, all that bitterness, all that hatred. The other thing I found out is how much hate I walk with and how prejudiced I was. That's how I saw the world. That's how I interacted with you. In bondage. And all the while looking for approval from you, needing, attached to your approval of me, which is bondage, total bondage. When in third column it talks about security, emotional security, that's it for me. That is it right there. My attachments to what you think of me makes or breaks me. So now I'm playing all sorts of roles. How many of us, I may have mentioned this last week, have been in really bad relationships, but it was better than being alone or having no relationship. I was getting something. Even if I was fighting, it was something than being alone. My attachments, over and over and over again. And I saw the contradiction in my life, this tapestry of contradiction in my entire life. I couldn't see that when God removes, and God's way of giving is removal most of the time. This whole process about subtraction, never addition, God gave me everything I need. But when God, something tangible he would remove from me, I interpreted that painful thing as bad. God was punishing me. I was like a child. If a child is running around with a sharp object, a little toddler, and you take it from them to keep them from getting hurt, that child thinks it's bad that you took it away from them. I'm the same way with God. Now at 58 years old, I want this. God's not giving to me. God removes it from me. I'm stomping my feet. Come on, God, I'll bargain with you. I'll make you a deal. We're all deal makers with God. I know I can be. But there's another piece that has gotten better. And that's my centered in God. My centeredness in God. God's centered instead of self-centered. That this thing goes off and said, just keep going. Just chop wood and carry water. I can't see where I'm going, God, but I'm going to keep going. I got to see that. In the fourth step, it gives us some promises. Peace and goodwill to all men, even our enemies. We're having a shift, and we didn't even get through the thing yet. We didn't do a step five. And so I finished inventory. Principles, lots of principles I wrote. Children should be seen and not heard. Woman's place is in the home. Don't drink and go to meetings. Put the plug in a jug. Do the right thing. Things like that. Real men has money, you know. All these belief systems that I don't know where they came from, but I treated them as truth. And I couldn't live up to one of them. I was being tortured by me, no one else. I'd rather tell someone I'm okay than to tell someone I'm hurting, when if I told someone I'm hurting or I'm confused, I don't understand, that may have gotten me free, but the ego wouldn't allow that. When I write inventory, there's no room for ego. That's why we pray before we write. And I finished the resentment inventory, and it went to fear. And behind all my resentments, behind my sex conduct is fear. Big Book calls it the evil and corroding thread. The evil and corroding thread. The fabric of my existence was shot through it. They're very powerful words, very graphic words. Bill illustrates this thing that we suffer from, that I suffer from, fear. Four-letter word. It penetrates every area of my life. And very often, I don't even know it's operating. That's how slippery it is and sneaky it is. Self-centeredness. You know, walking through them, I think everyone's looking at me. I get really uncomfortable. That's fear. While someone's talking to me, I'm thinking of the answer because I don't want you to think I'm a dummy. That's fear. I have to be profound. I have to be articulate. It goes, I have to be to get you to like me because I'm gripped in fear. Fear-based and insecure. How could I possibly have any kind of relationship with anyone? Then we fall in love with all these resentments, all these fears, all the sex conduct that hasn't been unraveled and fixed, and expect to have a healthy relationship with someone, thinking it's just going to change miraculously overnight. It ain't going anywhere. It's not looking to go anywhere. It won't go anywhere. And I don't have the power on my best day to push it out. But something happens in this work, in a surrender. Because if we don't think that putting us on paper, searching fearless and moral inventory on paper is not a surrender, you haven't done an inventory. What, you go to some clubhouse, they have each step with a spiritual principle behind each step. For me, has always been every step, and I speak for myself, has been one of surrender. And step four is a surrendering to a process and the trust that someone's not going to throw me out of the house when they hear step five. That I'm putting me on, I'm surrendering to this work to get better. It's got to be better than what I've been doing. Fear, the evil and corroding thread, the fabric of my existence was shot through with it. I operate out of fear. I see with fear. I speak with fear. I behave with fear. It's a mind-dominated life. Illusions and delusions, and I'm expecting to be in touch. I'm expecting to be free. And when the noise in a head gets too loud, a double vodka makes everything great. It's great now. Because I feel like I'm in charge, and I'm delusional for a little while until I wake up the next morning when I did it again. And the voices are back, and they brought friends. They're called guilt and remorse and embarrassment and humiliation. Yeah. Last night she looked like Bo Derek. Now she looks like Bo Diddley. I'm in serious trouble. Where's your teeth? No, Now you know why I do this work, man. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. And so many times I would go past that statement. Reviewed our fears thoroughly. Just keep reading. Bill makes a powerful statement. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. Let's take a look at this stuff. Let's examine what's going on with fear. Not just write them down and keep moving, but what's going on? What is being put on paper? And when I went to prayer, as I do now, to write, things will pop on paper that I didn't see coming. Because I can't see my illness. I don't know what's lurking back there, but God does. In step three, I says, basically, God, take my life, take me like the wretch I am, and do whatever you want me, just please get me free. Please give me back a life when I give you this wrecked life. And that's what he's doing. It says, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. So I'm writing fear, but not necessarily resentment is connected with that. But what's fueling that resentment is usually fear. We ask ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. And it says this, some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem. So I get a pocket full of money. I get the new car. I get the new girlfriend. I get the new house. I get the new something, something external. Money always worked for me because I was brought up with a belief system. Peter, my dad would say, the only thing you're ever going to trust in your life is the money in your pocket. Trust no one, just the money in your pocket. So when I had a pocket full of money, my shoulders were a little bit wider. My chest was nice and big and, you know, had that John Wayne swagger to me because I had some money. I was feeling pretty confident. I can go into the liquor store, the bar, and throw some money around. You think I'm somebody special now. See, I'm scared to death. Like a boy whistling in the dark, I'm feeling pretty good. Or maybe I drive up with that new car and just see who's looking at my new car because I'm special. And then the money goes away. And the car gets old. And the relationship she leaves. Or the health isn't so good. And maybe when I'm 25, I'm walking around all pumped up because I spent 2 hours in the gym. And maybe when I'm 75, I got a cane and I'm not so strong anymore. But my attachment was to wearing really tight shirts at an AA meeting. And, you know, I'm here. Those are the Jersey guys. Just joking. Right? I'm here. What happens when that's, because we live in a world of impermanence, what happens when that stuff goes? So when that stuff's there, it makes me confident, makes me feel good, but it's delusional. Because I've had money in Alcoholics Anonymous. 5-7 years into AA, bought my first home. I came into a windfall of money. I had nice money. Vacations, bought a new car. I love clothes. I love shoes. I had a whole thing going on. My ex-wife had a whole wardrobe. Then we got divorced. She took the house and the money. My ATM said insufficient funds. And I was out of work. I got laid off. All within like a 20-minute span. Bang, bang. Painful. I wept regularly. God had my head up, shoulder square, going through that. Got angry a few times. Painful as anything. I got married for once and once only. Now there's no more marriage, there's no more money, there's no more house. Her boyfriend's in the house I bought and remodeled. Painful. But was it bad? God didn't send me the trials of Job like I thought. God was pruning the tree. God says, you're too attached to the money. You're too attached to the things. You're too attached to walking. A little swagger in AA. A little too confident for your own good. This stuff's getting you drunk. You can't see it yet because how much money do I need? Just enough not to need God. How much stuff do I need? Just enough not to need God. God says, danger. This is going nowhere. She's alcoholic on top of it. She's a cocaine addict on top of it. We need to do something about this. And all this money you're parading around with is not going to be to your benefit. So guess what? I'm pulling the plug on everything. You need to get right size. And I said, this is painful. No, it's bad. It was painful. I interpret it as really bad. Why is God doing this to me? And I had that dialogue with God. Father, why are you doing this to me for? I'm sponsoring people. I go to meetings. I'm taking AA number one priority. Where's my piece of the pie? It was years later, God gave me the whole pie by removing. There was a time I could never, ever see that. I would cry to my sponsor, why is this all happening? Everything got removed. I like cigars. If anyone knows me, you know I like cigars. I remember going through that. I couldn't go to a cigar store and buy a few cigars because they're too expensive. That was my pocket money. I remember that day, I came and buy a couple of cigars for myself. That's a Mickey Mouse problem. But it seemed paramount. The degradation, I can't go in there and buy two smokes for myself. Because the $30 I got in my pocket is all I got till I don't know when. After having the house and all the white picket fence, the new car, the whole thing. God removed. And it was a blessing in disguise. But I was fearful as hell. And I got to see me on paper again. Over and over and over. As I do now. Every August, thereabout, my sponsor has us go through the work again. I don't know what's up ahead, but we've begun. I don't know what's back there. I can say maybe this and maybe that, but I don't know what's going to pop on paper. And you have the aha moments, the realization, oh, the reason why this is happening is because of this fear that's pushing from the back. Can't see it. No wonder why. People pleasing and things like that. So it says, perhaps there's a better way. We think so. For now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust our infinite God rather than our finite self. I always took that as a warning from Bill that I'm finite, I'm limited, I'm broken, I'm flawed. God is not. And as long as I do what I always did, I'm always going to get what I always got. I can't see down the road. God can. So God will push me this way when I think I want to go that way because there's danger this way and I can't see it. The infinite God, infinite love, infinite mercy, infinite forgiveness. Why don't I want to have a relationship with this power? Because I can't see it. I can't touch it yet. Trust me, anyone who's new, do this work. You will have your God moment, your God winks where this God that seemed to be intangible becomes incredibly tangible as you are sitting in front of me. This is the great thing about God. He, it, whatever you want to call, will reveal himself to you in his way, in his time. Not in my way, in my time. And sometimes in a very unlikely manner. Like cleaning up a drunk who smells and is in the same clothes and is puking on himself. I get struck with a divine light. In that, didn't see that one coming. And it's not while I'm tending to the drunk, it's on the way home. Where suddenly I just feel full and enriched by tending to one of God's kids. And sometimes it's right after a service in Mass, or during the service, or after an AA meeting. But I don't know where God's coming in or how he's going to show up. I just need to be the willing participant. Just to the extent that we do as God would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable me to match calamity with serenity? And it says, don't apologize for God for depending upon our Creator. I can't deny God in here. I won't deny God out there because when I get to the pearly gates, I don't want him to deny me. Okay. My job is to lose my life while I'm here. I've often joked, I don't have a life. Because if I'm trying to find self, trying to find my life, I'll simply lose it. I'll never get it. My job is to lose my life to him, and suddenly I find it. But not the one I planned on. Trust me, in June of 1980, the last thing I thought I'd be doing was, I get to do this a lot. I'm afraid of crowds. I'm not a good people guy. I'm not the social butterfly comes down the middle of the aisle doing high fives and, you know, dancing on a stage. I'm in the back row, quiet. This is a total contradiction. God says, no, I need you to go do this. I didn't see this one coming. The only time I felt comfortable in my days when I was a musician, I felt comfortable hiding behind drums. You sing. I'm not getting up there. I'm up here. How's this happen? I don't understand. Calamity with serenity. It's a huge promise. Whether we're doing step four and fear inventory specifically, or we're just going about our day, calamity with serenity, and not necessarily the calamity you watch on the news, because there's a lot of it now. Just turn on the news, calamity, all day long. What about the calamity in the head? This is the war zone in my head. What about the phone call, maybe from a doctor, that a loved one doesn't have much time, or God forbid one of us are sick, or maybe the phone call or the HR meeting where they say we don't need your services anymore, and you realize you don't have a lot of savings, things like that. Calamity. How do I meet that with serenity, not on my own power, but with God's power I can, God could, and what if he was sought? Huh? There's a couple more things about fear inventory. My attachments to external things was one of the best lessons I've gotten in Alcoholics Anonymous, that the looking for the external to remedy what was wrong in here was delusional. It wasn't going to work. And if you think about the world we live in right now, it encourages narcissism. Okay? Buy this car. If not, you're a loser. Ever watch the commercials at Christmas time? Right? You got the family, I don't know where they live, but it's a Hallmark card. They got the new Lexus with the ribbon on top. The snow is shoveled perfectly. There's no potholes. They're white. They're all from Connecticut somewhere. There's Brads and Toms and, you know, all these, you know. And they come out, and she's thrilled that he bought her a Lexus, and they got 2.5 kids, the whole thing. Right? And if you don't do that for Christmas, and maybe you only can get your loved one a dozen roses, you're a loser. So get the car and you're a man. Then you got the jewelry commercials. Then you got my body. No matter what I do to my body, according to TV, I'm a loser. You just, body's no good. You got to get this way. No, you got to get more this way. You got to even that way. Go on this diet. No, go on that diet. You should try all the diets. On and on and on. And they encourage us. We bite a lie. I do. We bite a lie to get more stuff. It encourages narcissism, which all that does is take me further away from God. And the reason why I look to get that stuff, because I'm so fearful. And I'm believing that if I get that, I'm going to be okay. When I make that much money, when I get that position in the company, when I get really noticed in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've said for the longest time, we have these things called white chips that you give out. We're thrilled you're back and you're not dead. Any elder would say, even if they're back again, they got hope because there's breath. And we applaud. Doesn't that encourage spotlight again where humility is needed right now? What would happen during the white chip ceremony if there was absolute silence? I wonder how much of an impact that would have to John and Mary going up and getting a white chip with no applause. We're supporting you. We're behind you. We'll put you on our shoulders. But we're not going to applause. We're not going to clap for a white chip. So when you walk up, the impact of, I'm dying, maybe I can get that now. And the long walk back to the chair, I'm bleeding out. I need to do something. It says we trust our God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let God demonstrate through us. Look at what Bill is saying. This is incredible. I'm a fall down drunk. I'm hopeless. I'm addicted to everything. My life is in shambles. And I come into this process. And Bill says that we're going to let God demonstrate through us, the fall down hopeless drunk, what God can do. We become examples of godliness. We bear witness for this power called God. In fact, many of us, the worst of us, are the ones who are shining examples of God. We've always heard God works through people. What's AA full of? A bunch of drunks and sometimes dope fiends who have the shift, who have the flip as a result of getting right with God. Everything changes. When you hear their stories, it doesn't make sense. They were in such bad shape, and they're shining examples of this godliness that makes it real. That gives it depth and weight. And they're no longer driven by 100 forms of fear, 100 forms of self-seeking, self-delusion, all of those things. They marinate somewhere in the back. Sometimes they go dormant, but they don't own us. And how I do fear inventory. I make a master list of fears. like I did with resentment. First thing I always do, a little spiritual tool we've always worked with. Thank you, God, for allowing me to be searching, fearless, and moral. I write that across the top of the page, kind of a centering prayer. It's not in the big book, just a little thing my lineage taught me. Because God's going to allow me to be searching, fearless, and moral, not me. Then I work with the lay aside prayer. God, please let me lay aside or set aside everything I think I know about the big book, the 12 steps, AA, and you, God, for an open mind and a new experience. God, please let me see my truth. Then I go silent. And then there's a movement to pick up the pen, and we start writing. The pen becomes a spiritual translator. I write a master list of fears. Fear of dying. Fear of no money. Fear of poor health. Fear of getting old. There's a gentleman who's passed on from California. When he heard my fear inventory, I was going through the work, I don't know, third or fourth time, and he heard, you know, fear of dying, fear of no money was still there. He says, write the opposite too. Fear of never dying, fear of having unlimited funds, fear of having great health, fear of having all your wishes come true. I thought it was lunacy. You know what? Even with that stuff, when I got what I wanted, I still had fear that owned me. No matter what you put to me, I got fear. I have fear. And only God could and would if he was sought to remove the fear. So I wrote a master list of fears. I took the first fear and wrote it down. And right next to that, I write, I'm selfishly trying to control and manage this fear by. And I give an example. What I do in the face of fear, isolate, strike out, become vengeful, act out sexually. Trust me, when you're in fear or resentment and you can't deal with that, I need something, so I go down here and I start acting out. I act out with food, act out with sex, act out with gambling to deal with that disease and discomfort. I'm selfishly trying to control and manage this fear by. And I get to see what I do in the face of fear over and over and over. It's the same players. Same defects keep showing up. And next that I write the solution for me to this whole thing. I'm not trusting or relying upon God to care and protect me. That's why I have fear. When I go through my day and I'm feeling dis-ease and discomfort, I have stopped trusting, relying upon God to care and protect me. I'm not trusting, relying upon God to care and protect me. Father, please care and protect me. Your will, not mine, be done. Because anytime I get my will and I start to push against God's will, guess what comes out the other end? Fear. It may show up in a resentment, but it's fear. Contempt, jealousy, envy, and the big one, pride. Pride. That'll block me from God. Fear behind that one. The seven deadly sins. Fear is fueling all of them. The evil and corroding thread. Bill's beautiful when he does this stuff. And so I looked at my fears, why I had them, what I did in the face of fear, not trusting and relying upon God to care and protect me. I have my fear inventory. And we went over the sex conduct. Big Book doesn't care if we hang from chandeliers at 3 o'clock in the morning with him or her or something in the middle. That's a good joke. I know about political correctness. I just did it. I'm going right to hell after this talk is over, too. That's another thing. Sex conduct. Book says we don't want to be the arbiter on anyone's sex conduct. It says we all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. And I'm talking about physical ailments when it comes to sex. They're talking about conduct, our thinking, our perceptions about it, the roles we think we're supposed to play, what she's supposed to play, what he's supposed to play, what I'm supposed to play. Guy's the king of the house, get married before you're 25, have babies, and work until you retire. Those are rules I were given. I fell miserably at that. I didn't know how to treat women. I bought belief systems that you be a man around women. I'll leave that there. Can I have one healthy relationship? I had to take a look at my sex conduct, and some of it was embarrassing. That this was my contradiction. I knew right from wrong. I knew this was not the good thing to do. I knew I should have left her alone. I knew I should have, and I didn't have the power to. I knew I shouldn't even be in this relationship. I couldn't stop because I was afraid of being alone. My thoughts, my ideas about life, about the whole thing, wrong. Over, I get an F on the report card. Thank the good Lord that since I've been an Alcoholics Anonymous, that stuff has changed. That doesn't exist anymore day at a time. When a woman comes into Alcoholics Anonymous and she's hurt and she needs help, especially she's new, I take it to the ladies. We got one at the door. Can you go get her? That's a shift in perceptions and conduct because of the grace of God. So we look at our conduct over the years past. And some of us, maybe not all of us, have those things where we found ourselves in embarrassing situations to take it to the grace stuff. The sex stuff is always the thing in step five, the one that always makes us kind of squirrely. You know, we did some things for the price of a drink or a drug or attention. How am I going to even put this on paper? If there's a name for it, it's been done. Many of us have it. That's the poison that's just sitting here, the plaque on the soul. And they knew it when they put it together. When God inspired Bill to write the book, we got some stuff, it's got to get out. It's just sitting there. It's poison. If there's a name for it, it's been done. Put it on paper. I put the stuff on paper. I was very sheepish about sharing. I remember the writing was a little, it looked like hieroglyphics, that's what it looked like. No one can see this. Oh my God. And my sponsor kept saying, you too? Yeah. But it was out, and it dies in the light. And little by slowly, we chop wood, carry water, we complete this big body of work. And we go into step five, and we unload it. Four and five is like, house cleaning includes step five. One is the writing part, one is the talking part, but it's the same movement. Because a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient. If I do this fourth step and don't share anyone, I just have words on paper, that there's no growth in that. But part of that house cleaning process, after God puts it on paper for me, I need to come to you and say, can you listen to this? Most of us get sponsors nowadays who sets up an appointment and then we unload the purging of this poison. And sometimes in the middle of that, sometimes on the back end of it, and sometimes in six and seven, the fifth step promises, which we'll talk about next week because I'm out of time here, come to fruition. Where we've had this shift on perceptions, our point of view has changed. Perceptions and conceptions have changed. And we love the effect produced by God. Suddenly, the central fact on page 25 is happening for us. It is all about God. Godliness and doing what's right and not taking cheap shots. We're going to have hiccups. We're going to make mistakes. They put erasers on pencils for that reason. But the whole shift has happened. We look different. We sound different. We speak different. We treat others different. This is godliness happening for folks like us. I'll lay out some here to Vegas, based on many of our track records, ought not to be sitting in a meeting on a Thursday night at 7:15 to 8:15. Talking about step work to get better. Sipping coffee. I know where I usually wind up. But here we are. Commencing shoulder to shoulder, book says, upon a common journey. And the equalizer is when we walk in the door. As soon as you walk in the door, you say you're alcoholic. We all know you. And you know us. Different walks of life. We have the fear. We have the resentment. We have the insecurity. We have the ego. We have the self-centered. We have the self-seeking. The plans and designs that went to hell. We don't know how to get out of our own way. Please help. We know. Because we've walked that walk. But the great thing is we get free. That's all I got. Peace.
Help me thank Pete one more time. All right, and we have Fred doing the secretary's report tonight.
Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. in keeping with the Severn tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked a friend to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, I'm Josh. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, family. Great message. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured? That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. We have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered. Thanks.
Thank you. 1940-style Big Book sponsorship from the fourth to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. You guys can just stand up for a moment, please. Everyone who's available for sponsorship, can we please meet them up front after the meeting? Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting in the same building on the third floor. Next week, the Monday and Thursday night meeting is going to be in the sanctuary across the way. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of bells. Thank you, guys. I'll see you next week.
We have tonight's sessions and all the past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone, as Fred said, Monday and Thursday next week are going to be across the street in the sanctuary. And those who wish to thank the speaker tonight, please line up down the center aisle. And we're going to close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father. Good night, everybody.
Body's heavy, shoulders thirsty, body's aching. I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah, and I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah, the only thing that I can do is keep on praying, 'cause on my own I just can't get it right. Accumulation, yeah. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to
profit me anything in the end. On my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you, I become a much stronger man.
Stop your sighing, baby.